Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Even though it's a holiday week, the 2016 race for the White House didn't stop. Republican Ben Carson is traveling to Jordan today to meet with Syrian refugees as he tries to bolster his foreign policy credentials. And that's just the beginning of the 2016 news there is to talk about. So it's time for our weekly roundtable. And joining us now is Jay Newton-Small, Washington correspondent for Time. Hi, Jay.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Great to have you. And Margaret Talev, White House correspondent for Bloomberg News. Hi, Margaret.
Hi, Magda. How are you?
I'm doing great, and happy day after Thanksgiving to both of you.
Thank you.
So let's start with Republican frontrunner Donald Trump. Surprise, surprise. He's once again generating lots of headlines because of controversial things he's been saying. Now, this week, he continued to insist that he saw Muslim Americans in New Jersey celebrating after the 9/11 terrorist attacks. And at a rally in Columbus, Ohio on Monday, he quoted from a Washington Post article from back in 2001. Here he is.
In Jersey City, within hours of two jetliners plowing into the World Trade Center, law enforcement authorities detained and questioned a number of people who were allegedly seen celebrating the attacks.
And then Trump had to deny mocking a reporter who has a disability who wrote the original Post article. So there's story on top of story here with Donald Trump. And Jay, let's start with you. Trump's poll numbers seem to keep going up. So what's actually going on here?
Well, we've been predicting the demise of Donald Trump for about 6 months now. You remember, gosh, back in July, people were writing about how when he insulted John McCain and said that he was a wimp for getting captured by the Vietnamese and not actually a hero,
right.
Everyone was like, oh, my God, his campaign is over. His career is dead. And it's only gotten stronger. He's kind of, the more you criticize him, the stronger he gets. And it's hard to see how that really comes down. I do think that things will change when voters actually start to seriously think about who they're going to vote for in this case.
And you have some indications in the polls about the sort of flip side to that, which is when you look at his favorable and unfavorable numbers, right? I mean, at Bloomberg, we did a poll about 10 days ago where Donald Trump's unfavorable rating, 61%, his favorable's at 34%. ABC and Washington Post's most recent polling has really comparable numbers, you know, much higher unfavorable ratings. So
is that among likely Republican voters?
No, these are nationwide adults.
And so
this points to trouble that he would have in a general election. But, like, you know, don't forget, I mean, when voters really get down to brass tacks, that tends to be one of the things they look at is electability.
Right.
So
exactly. And, you know, you want to, I mean, he's pretty much dead in the water for a general election. You look at Latinos, you look at women. I mean, his numbers are just terrible with those two groups. And those are two groups you cannot win the White House without. So when you start looking at how you're going to actually, you know, pick a nominee, somebody who can possibly win, Donald Trump is not seriously part of that category.
Right. Well, let's see how we're seeing movement sort of in the rest of the GOP pack, because there are two polls that have put Texas Senator Ted Cruz essentially deadlocked with Donald Trump in Iowa. So we've got some tape here of Cruz on Fox News explaining why he thinks that's happening.
Whether it was Bob Dole or John McCain or Mitt Romney, every time we listen to the voice of Run to the Middle, we get clobbered. It doesn't work. They're all good, honorable men, but what they did didn't work. And I think what Republican primary voters are looking for is the strongest proven conservative, someone who's a consistent conservative, someone who's the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow.
So, Margaret, do you think Cruz is catching on now?
He is certainly rising up in terms of, again, that internal contest and in terms of potential vote splitting for someone like Donald Trump. Again, when you look at the national stage beyond Iowa, at more broadly at some of the early states, he's definitely a top contender. He's definitely up there. But that, again, that sort of center block of Republicans seems to be a lot more interested in Marco Rubio these days. And, you know, it's interesting to see where would the Trump support and the Cruz support overlap, and do they kind of are they competing for the same votes?
Right. Well, Jay, I'm going to get to you in a second. But since Margaret did mention Marco Rubio, We have a little bit of tape from him this week because he and his wife actually did a joint interview that aired just yesterday on the Today Show. And so we have him here criticizing the rules of engagement for airstrikes against ISIS that he says are actually hampering the United States military.
They've unnecessarily avoided taking strikes because they're concerned that if they blow up the oil plant, that there might be civilians, even just one, killed. And look, that's always a legitimate concern that we have. But we must destroy the revenue source, which is the ability to generate oil.
So, Jay, tell me about your take this week on Rubio.
Well, Rubio, I mean, as much as we were just talking about the ceilings that both Cruz and Trump face, Rubio is sort of the opposite. He doesn't really have a ceiling. We're just beginning to get a sense of how strong his support could be. There's this old sort of adage of the three-legged stool for the Republican primary systems. The first leg is social conservatives in Iowa, fiscal conservatives in New Hampshire, and then, you know, hawks and military conservatives in South Carolina. And Rubio has by far the sturdiest stool. So he has the most amount of support in all three groups, but in so he's very appealing to that center group that Margaret was talking about earlier.
Mm. Well, let me ask you both, because, I mean, it seems like we're starting to see more thinking or at least more writing in the press about how GOP insiders or, you know, the Republican establishment may be looking at ways to bring down Donald Trump, for lack of a better term. I don't have the right language for it, to be honest. But it doesn't, as we talked about earlier, it doesn't seem to be working. I mean, are you hearing indications of a new strategy from the party establishment?
It's kind of hard to know who the party establishment is anymore.
Good
or
point.
What that means.
Yeah.
Well, no, because don't forget, you know, when Jeb Bush began this odyssey,
we haven't even said his name yet.
Eh? Yeah, I know, right. Right. You know, he was the guy to beat, right, on paper at least, because he was so sewn into the establishment of the Republican Party, his brother's legacy, his father's legacy before that, the money, the connections to kind of business Republicans and long-term establishment Republicans. And, you know, you could argue how much of that has to do with whether he's been a great candidate or not, but a lot of it has to do with how much there really is kind of a controlling establishment inside the Republican Party. A lot of this, there's a couple different establishment groups inside the Republican Party. And a lot of what's going on now is a competition for who controls the party. Now, some people who I guess you would call establishment Republicans have looked to Rubio as someone who can kind of split the difference, because at one point he at least carried a lot of the interest of Tea Party Republicans. And at another point, he's someone who establishment Republicans, under the old definition of what that means, you know, could live with. He's someone who could also connect with Hispanics. But for him, there has been sort of two questions. And one is, you know, he seems young. How much foreign policy chops does he have? And another are questions about he and his family's personal financial management, which is why I think you're starting to see kind of more of controlled images on his campaign's mm-hmm. part of he and his wife out there together, kind of introducing her and introducing the notion of him as a family guy and him as somebody who makes joint decisions, kind of an appeal to women, an appeal to that establishment, and an appeal to younger voters.
Right. You know, we didn't even mention Ben Carson yet.
Oh, but we should.
We
yes.
should. Yeah. We've just got about a minute and a half to go here. He's traveling to Jordan today to visit with Syrian refugees. Speaking of foreign policy chops or lack thereof. Jay, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it's striking, because the more Trump sort of seems ignorant, people kind of enjoy it or celebrate it or think it's funny and, you know, it's entertaining. It's another part of the entertaining. And he kind of blusters his way through it. The more Ben Carson seems ignorant, and he's the opposite of bluster, right? He's this really quiet guy who's very almost not meek, but, you know, just very unassuming and self, you know, not very. And you wonder what kind of world leader he's going to be like, you know what I mean, in the sense of, like, you know, well, obviously Trump is sort of terrifying in the idea of him negotiating with Putin. But like Ben Carson's the opposite. Like, is he going to assert himself and
right.
really, you know?
But he's had a couple of those stumbles on answering foreign policy questions. And this
yeah.
is obviously he's trying to get the narrative back on track to
yeah.
show
right.
that he knows anything about, you know, like, where is Syria? What are accurate details about the Syrian refugee program, that he wants to get the narrative back on track with him. And he thinks by doing this trip, he can show some leadership and some command of the issues.
Yeah, yeah. That he can be a commander-in-chief, that he has the foreign policy chops, that he understands what he's talking about when he's talking about bombing Syria, you know, not sending troops on the ground.
And not allowing refugees here.
Exactly. Which is, a lot of Republicans have taken this position led by Trump, but it is a pretty controversial mm-hmm. position when you think about it.
Yeah.
I mean, America is based on the land of the free. The idea of just declining all refugees from a country in a war that is obviously going to proliferate and last for years is pretty big.
Well, Jay Newton-Small is Washington correspondent for Time. Great to talk with you, Jay. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me on, Meghna.
And Margaret Tolev, White House correspondent for Bloomberg News. Great to speak with you as well.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And happy post-Thanksgiving to both of you.
You too.